With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And it's here. It's the finale of Eurobash on MMA Fighting. The last rant, as I've decided to call it, in an ode to Michael Jordan's The Last Dance. It's been a fine run, Noel McGrath. But here we are, an hour from the end, as they say. How are you doing, my love? I hope you have the Kleenex close by. I know you're going to get very tearful thinking about your time here.
Me, very emotional guy. I'm not really emotional unless I'm on the gargle, to be honest with you. I do tend to get emotional watching football, but bar that, nothing really sort of gets me emotional. Bar you, Petey, you do my fucking head in. We all know that. But yeah, listen, our time is coming to an end. Shit happens. So is life. just gotta shovel on, man.
It's been fantastic. It's been brilliant. We started in August 2018. Our first interview was Javier Mendez. We had the original panel was myself, Noel, and Neil Siri, who we're going to be hearing from later on. Of course, he believes the downfall of this show is the because weasel. Of his absence. He's probably right. Our goal was to shine a light on this European scene, and it worked very, very well. I think we put a huge spotlight on Cage Warriors and KSW promotions like that, and I see a lot more media members covering them as well. Not to say we were the first, but we certainly helped gain them a bit of ground in this part of the world, and very, very happy we managed to do that. Me and Noel McGrath remained friends throughout the nobody even left halfway through the season of Eurobash. We always brought it to the forefront, which we're very proud of course.
Bar Siri, he left. He ran a mile.
Do you think he was afraid of you? Do you think he thought he was going to get physical one day with you? And
yeah.
That's when he was like, I will never be able to live that down if Noel McGrath smashed me.
Belly was going to get him, definitely, 100%. Eat that little weasel. It'd be like... be like a Rottweiler having his dinner, I suppose, really, wouldn't it? That little fucking squirt. He's going to batter me now the next time he sees me. Team you up, you will. It's been fun, Pete.
Let's not let it get in the way of the episode. We have news to get through. There's so much news. It feels like everything's kicking back off again, for Christ's sake.
Too much news.
So let me have a flick through these. Tagir Ulyanbekov signs for the UFC. Marvin Vettori v. Carl Robertson rebooked for June 13th. Askar Askarov v. Alejandre Pantoja is targeted for July 18th. Caitlin Chookagian faces Antonina Shevchenko at a UFC event on May 30th. Ariane Lipski v. Luana Carolina is rebooked for a UFC card on June 13th. MTK Global have announced a partnership with KHK, which is quite interesting on the back of our conversation with Phil O'Connor last week about Daniel Kinahan. Gamrot v. Park 3 and Wozek v. Mankowski have been slated for a July 11th marquee with KSW. And two new signings to KSW. And I had to ask Alan Murphy to send me voice notes on how to pronounce these names, but I'll still mess them up here for you. Mateusz Legerski and FEN double champ Andrei Grebik, I'll call him, signed for KSW. So there you go. We have that to look forward when things kick off again.
Wonderful.
Now,
pronunciation was right in T. Excellent.
No one here to correct us, so I think I got it perfectly.
It's good.
It seems as though, and we're going to be speaking to our good friend Ariel Helwani, who can shine a bit of light on this as well, that international fighters seem to have been activated over the last week or so even. Molly McCann seems to have a fight booked on the Fight Island. Any word on this from you? I see a lot of talk that it could be Yaz Island in Abu Dhabi. Mm. Any ideas for you where it could be, or is that what you're hearing too?
Man, yeah, I don't know. You know, your guess is as good as mine. Like Yaz Island, I don't know how that's like. It's not. They couldn't have bought that. Like it's a place. It's obviously they've had events up near there before in Abu Dhabi, so it's going to be interesting. No, I haven't heard anything really, unless we're doing something in Inishmore, like. Would be great.
Be perfect, yeah.
But no, man, I don't know. It's not, to be honest with you, PT, I find this, you know, I'm not fully sold on this from Dana. I think he's, you know, we might hit a road bump with this yet. We don't know. You know, it is an issue. We've talked about it on the show the last couple of weeks with two of the guests we've had on, like Darren Till mentioned it. You know, Paul Felder reckons it's a big advantage for the American fighters. So it is like there's very few European fighters booked in the next number of weeks, as we'll talk about later. I think it's what Blagoy Ivanov is one of the few that's booked. He's based out there, as far as I'm aware, as well. So listen, it needs to happen. We need to get European fighters back active. It's very, very important for these guys. Like, half of them haven't had 90% of the European roster, even probably more, haven't had a fight in what, three, four months. It's mental. Yeah, it's a long time.
It's probably going to be a bit longer considering how many people they can put on the card and shit like that. Like, it's not very easy for the UFC, I'd imagine, to accommodate everyone. But speaking of European fighters, Francis Ngannou v. John Jones, Niall, I was shocked to see it the other day that you, it's just like, does anyone even care about this fight? Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people do, Noel. Yeah,
I think a lot of people don't either. You know, I can understand from the UFC's point of view why they wouldn't want to put that together. You know, if you're moving John Jones up and you're taking the risk of putting him in there with a guy who's not even world champion in that division, you know, and let's be honest, like, it's not as if Francis is a household name. You know,
he
like
would
a lot. Yeah, he can potentially be that. You know, a lot more people, I'm sure, know who Stipe Miocic is. He's the champion. I just think there's no point in the UFC risking a potential future date with Stipe and John Jones if he wants to go down that route. I think it's the fight that makes sense for them. You know, you can sell the champion versus champion thing. With Francis Ngannou, you can't do that. You know, if he goes in there and cleaves John Jones' head off, which is a very sort of possibility that it could happen, you know, it takes away a lot of stock for John Jones as well. And I don't think the UFC have really embraced the idea of putting that fight together, and I actually totally agree with them. I was never liking that fight. I think if John Jones is to go up, there's only one fight. It is the world champion, whoever that's going to be, and currently that champion is Stipe Miocic.
I understand the point in terms of titles and things like that, but I think for a fight alone, I can't think of a more compelling fight outside of the Conors of this world in terms of gaining a casual audience. Like, I mean, you don't need to even have Francis speak. You just play his highlight reel and he's fighting John Jones, the immovable object. What do you think's bigger if you're Francis? Becoming the first African heavyweight champion in the sport or beating John Jones?
That's an interesting one. I think probably from Francis.
I saw this being debated on The Athletic. I think it was Josh Gross and Ben Folks, I think they were debating it. Yeah. So I have stolen that question from the split decision, but I'm wondering, what do you think? I think it's a hard one to pick.
It is, but I think you'd have to go for the world title because, you know, that's uncharted territory in Africa, a country that's obviously, it's starting to produce mixed martial artists of very, very high caliber. And I think to have that strap in the world's premier mixed martial arts organization means more than beating John Jones currently at the moment. And, you know, there's a lot of development needed for the sport there in Africa. There's so many, you know, as we see with Rug, for example, there's so much untapped talent out there that can transfer over to mixed martial arts. And I think to have that accolade, that title, would mean more than anything for any African-based or African fighter that's on the UFC roster at the moment. And, you know, you can wait for these John Jones fights to happen. With him winning that world title, that opens up many doors. That opens up, you know, a potential fight against John Jones' future date down the line. That's another thing I think we take into advantage of the last question you asked me, is that we can do this again. You know, the Stipe fight mightn't be there in 3 or 4 years. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do get what you're saying. I think the part that is kind of annoying about it is the fact that it's, the reason why it isn't happening is because the UFC won't pay them for it, you know? But, like, it's tough, isn't it? Like, I mean, this is, you know,
is that the real reason though?
And apparently the greatest fighter of all time, and they wouldn't. Do you think it is a payment thing, or do you think they're just more along the thinking of you, where they don't want to sacrifice certain matchups? And
yeah, because they make more money long term.
Payment means nothing really to them.
Well, they make more money long term if they don't do this fight at the moment, in my opinion. Because I think if they do DC and Stipe too, and I mean, a lot of people are giving Stipe shit at the moment, and they tend to forget.
That's mad, isn't it?
That's mad. The guy's out there, he's you know, on the front lines, you know, fighting, firefighter, still working. He's had eye injuries to deal with as well, taking a little bit of time out for that. He's become a father in the last year. You know, and you've Daniel Cormier playing this narrative, oh, he doesn't want to fight me, he won't give me... Listen, Daniel, at the end of the day, you would not give him an immediate rematch after you poked the eyes off him. In that fight, and then, you know, he should be allowed to do the same thing, and he shouldn't be under any pressure from the UFC to take that. But going back to the original point, if the UFC play this their cards right in terms of putting on the right matches at the right time, they're going to make more money in the long term, and that's what it's all about. And like, at the end of the day, listen, Francis Ngannou had a shot at Stipe Miocic. He didn't beat him. So in my opinion, the bigger fight is John Jones versus Stipe Miocic, if that is to happen, if he goes up there. Daniel Cormier can sit and wait.
I disagree. I get what you're saying, but I disagree that it's a bigger fight, John Jones v. Stipe, than Francis v. John Jones. I just think that would sell so much. And especially in this day and age, if it was to happen now, in a situation where you can't do a lot of interviews and stuff. I mean, I feel like the Ngannou highlight reel could sell this fight better than any press conference, really. You know what I mean? But it's not, you know, I know that it's nuanced, and I do take your point, but I don't, like, can you think of, I really can't think of any fight other than a Conor fight that would be as captivating as Ngannou v. Jones. Do you really think that Stipe v. Jones is bigger than this pay-per-view was?
Yeah.
Just because of the belt?
Because the two baddest motherfuckers on the planet. Like, that's really the way it is. And listen, Franny has had a shot at Stipe.
Didn't go well.
Yeah, it didn't go well. Stipe, you know, I boxed him. It was a clinic, to be honest with you, from Mr. Miocic in that fight. And I just don't get why people were so hung up on this Jones idea. Like, really? It's like Ngannou is only sort of recaptured what we've seen in him in the last two or three fights. And obviously coming off that fantastic knockout. But, like, at the end of the day, he's lost two scraps in there in his last few. Stipe's only lost one, and he redeemed that loss as well. So Stipe is the baddest motherfucker in the match. And the guy just doesn't get enough, does not get near enough credit for what he deserves, in my opinion. And that's obviously rangs with the UFC and Dana White as well. He's always had a turbulent time and relationship with the UFC and Dana White. You know, I'm sure they don't want him to be champion, but at the end of the day, he is their fucking champion. And they need to start taking into consideration what he wants to do as well. Because, like, really, even the Jones fight, or the DC fight, I'm not interested particularly in seeing part three of that at the moment. I think they should strike while the iron's hot. Go, I've said this for a long, long time, they should Stipe Miocic and John Jones. If John Jones was going to go up, it's got to be Stipe Miocic because he's the champion. Simple. That's it. End of.
You're talking about Stipe getting a hard time. One of the worst shows I've seen is people calling for him to be stripped. You're like, are you seriously going to strip a frontline worker during the coronavirus? You know what I mean? That would be, I've seen people say this online, that would be the worst fucking decision anyone could make in terms of optics. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, it's absolute madness. It's crazy. And people that think like that, like the guy fought last August, we've seen other fighters take, you know, a lot longer than that out and not be stripped of their titles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, get a grip, get with it. The guy needs a fucking break. He's the world's heavyweight champion. You know, he's fought two hard fights against Daniel Cormier. He got injured from the back of one of them. He's on the front lines fighting. He's a bloody young kid, not too long married. Fucking hell, man. Like, what else have you got to do to shut up people at times? And he'll get back in there, I'm sure, before the end of this year. And we'll see him either take on DC again or potentially even that John Jones fight.
Let's get on with our first interview of the day.
Forget
it's one
Franny.
Of the big... Sorry?
Forget Franny.
Okay. No, nobody will. You're the only man in the world that doesn't like that fight. It's amazing. But I do get your point with Stipe. But let's get on to our first interview of the day. It's a man who helped this train get rolling. The GOAT of MMA media. Ariel Helwani of ESPN, and of course the CEO of Helwani Boxing. Great for him to get on the show. We've been wanting him on for a long, long time. It's sad that it had to be the final one, but great to speak to him as always. He's always been a big, big supporter of ours, and we really appreciate it. Great to speak to Ariel. We'll be back in about 25 minutes to speak about McGregor v. Usman. And we'll also have a look at McGregor's GOAT rankings he put up over the weekend and see how close our top five is to McGregor's. So see you in a bit. We'll be back in a while. And now I am joined by the great Ariel Helwani, the face of ESPN MMA, and one of my great inspirations, of course, and a man who gave us lots of encouragement and lots of help with the concept for this show. And what better way to the first time I interview him on one of these shows be our last one on Eurobash. Very sad, but a momentous occasion all the same. Ariel, how are you, my love?
I'm doing great. What's the crack, PT? You know, it's bittersweet on many different fronts. Number one, because as you mentioned, this is the last Eurobash on MMA fighting. Number two, because I've been waiting for almost 100 episodes now for you to invite me, and you finally invite me on the last one. And number three, and perhaps most important, I was wondering, are we going to do like a one-on-one or a 2v1? And apparently I'm not big enough for Niall, so it looks like it's just you and me here. One of these days I'll get the 2v1, as they say. Yeah, but I'm happy nonetheless to be with you.
Yeah, Niall, I asked him about it. He's like, who? And I was like, yeah, sorry about that. You know, he just doesn't know
you. Can't be bothered.
Ariel. Like, he's just not big time enough for him, I guess.
No, I understand. He can't be bothered. He's probably really busy right now doing God knows what.
Yeah.
But most importantly, I'm a huge fan. I've tweeted about the show. I look forward to the next chapter for you and Niall and the show itself. You know, sorry to hear how things went. I don't think it's an indictment on you guys or the show. It's just an unfortunate time in our lives, but I'm glad to see that you are kicking it until the very end with MMA fighting, and I can't wait to see what's next for you.
How are you finding this all, Ariel? I know you do work from home an awful lot, but you know, you used to have a few days in the studio as well. Is this very different for you, and is it good? Is it a good different, or how are you finding it?
It's dramatically different because, like, right now we're taping this on Monday afternoon. I would be, you know, in the studio doing my show during this time, driving. For the past almost 2 years, I was driving to Bristol, Connecticut, which is 2 hours away from where I live. And, you know, that's quite the trek, 2 hours, you know, one way and then 2 hours back. So I was driving 4 hours on Mondays, and that's a lot. And, you know, after doing the show, you're very tired and all this stuff, or at least I am, because, you know, it was 3 hours, 3.5 hours straight. And so now it's dramatically different. And my Mondays have changed as well. I'm no longer doing, for now, like those shows with the 5, 6, 7, 8 guests doing the DC and Helwani show. But I would say I've really, really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the change of pace. I've enjoyed switching it up. I was doing one sort of show for 11 years. And so it's nice to do something different. I have my Wednesday show as well. But, you know, honestly, being at home, two things. Number one, it reminds me how I started. I'm literally sitting at the same table that I sat at when I started in 2007 doing, you know, my website and interviewing people that I was reaching out to via MySpace. So it kind of takes me back to that. And I think that I was sort of built and started on a path where, you know, I'm used to, you know, just reaching out to people and being creative. Even though I don't have a fancy schmancy studio behind me, I'm still doing it the same old way. I just so happen to be with ESPN, so that's a little different. And number two, the time that I've gone to spend with my family, you know, my wife and kids and our dog during this time has just been really nice. Like the bonding and just being with each other and getting to do things like learning, you know, them learning how to ride a bike. I still can't ride a bike, but they've learned how to ride
a bike.
That's
mental, Ariel. That is so weird.
And just all that stuff. So it's honestly, I hate that it's happened this way, and I hate that what's happening to this society, to world, to humanity, but I'm trying to make the best of it. At the beginning, I was very down, but now I feel like I've hit a groove, so to speak, to where, you know, I'm seeing the bright side.
Yeah, I love the show with you and DC. You bounce off each other so well. And, you know, as I'm watching that show, I'm kind of thinking, does it ever go back to the way it was? Does it need to go back to the way it was? You know, do you think the way we're doing our jobs
in this time will maybe change how we do it in the future. I mean, do you feel like there is going to be a big rush to get you back in the studio and have a million guests on every Monday? Because, man, we only have, you know, between 2 and 4 guests every week here, and it's a nightmare. I can only imagine. Like, do you still book the whole thing by yourself and everything? That's crazy, man. Like, I mean, it must be an awful lot less stress, at least just to have to get one guy on the phone on Monday, right?
Oh, my God. My Sundays are dramatically different now. I mean, you know, I will say this to you. I would watch UFC events, the big ones, right, where there's the biggest names. And there was a point where I wasn't even enjoying them as much because after every fight, I'm thinking to myself, okay, how do I get this person on Monday? What is it going to take to get this person on Monday? Who do I have to go through? Will they say yes? Are they beat up? Do they want to talk? Was it controversial? And it's like, you're watching these great fights and you have this great privilege. And all I'm worried about is booking it, because booking it is so tough. Like, if I had to just show up on Monday and do the show, that would be a blast. But I have to book the show because, and that's partly my fault. Like, I don't hand the reins off to anyone. And, you know, I just kind of feel like I've been doing it for so long, so I should continue to do it. But yeah, things are dramatically different. And I have to say, you know, watching the last three events, and I'm sure it'll be the same on Saturday when Woodley fights and then 250, etc. It's really been a lot different because I don't have to worry about reaching out to these people right away on Saturday night, late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, and trying to get them to confirm to be on the show. And I've just really enjoyed, you know, I've always been hesitant to do something like this with Daniel or any other fighter because, you know, and they're in the midst of their career and you don't want to seem biased or any of this stuff. But once the pandemic hit and we were all at home, DC and I have been talking about when he'd retire that we would do something together. But like, it was like, all right, well, there's no better time than now. We might as well do it. Who knows how long we'll be, you know, sitting on the sidelines with no sports or no UFC, no MMA. So we might as well do it. And thank God, because we have this great relationship behind the scenes, it translated into this show. So I really don't know what the future is going to be. Like, is this going to be the case from here on out? Are they going to change it in a month? I really don't know. I will just say I'm really enjoying it, and I really like what it has resulted in as far as my MMA watching or UFC watching specifically, because that's the only thing going on, because I don't have to worry every Monday about booking a gazillion people to come on the show. And I hope that the fans understand that 11 years of doing something and booking them, you know, all on my own, you know, that, yeah, sometimes it's fun to switch things up a little bit.
I can't imagine. I don't know how you sustained that for so long, man. Even thinking about that there, I'm exhausted. Is Chael jealous of your relationship with DC? Obviously, you guys, you know, you had your own show, and I feel like maybe he might feel a bit pushed out by this blossoming relationship
really hitting,
between you and DC.
Really hitting me with the hard-hitting questions here, PT.
Well,
I love it.
Look, man, this is why they pay me the big bucks.
yes, I love it very much. No, not at all. I mean, it's a totally different show on a different platform. Chael, Ariel and the Bad Guy is on ESPN Plus, and we built ESPN Plus with our hands off our shoulders. We made that platform what it is. And the fact that we don't get recognition for it is a crime, if you ask me, a travesty.
It is.
DC and Helwani is a completely different show. It's like we're talking a little bit MMA. We're talking a little bit other stuff. It's free format. It's kind of a radio show style where it's just us going back and forth. Ariel and the Bad Guy is a lot more produced, 5 rounds, 5 minutes, debate style. So to me, like, yo, why can't I have 2 shows? Why can't I have 3 shows? Why can't I have 4 shows? At the moment, I'm very, very lucky. I have DC and Helwani on Monday. I have Ariel and the Bad Guy on Wednesday. I have the Helwani Show podcast on Wednesday as well, which is more like the Monday show, what that used to be with the multiple interviews. I host the Snapchat show for ESPN MMA. I host the Facebook show for them as well. I got things going, my man. So I feel like, you know, why can't I serve multiple masters and everyone get a piece of the pie? So I'm happy.
Kind of just said that DC walked through the door that Chael opened, but we can move on. We can move on. you know, there's been a lot of talk. Here we go. Here, I'm going to start grilling you now. You better be ready for this, Ariel. Island, right? We need Fight Island in Europe because most international fighters think it's their best chance of competing. They think the visa situation to get into the US is too complicated at the moment. And when you talk to these European fighters or fighters internationally, they all think that's the way they do it. What have you heard? Where is Fight Island? We're seeing a lot of reports that it could be Yaz Island in Abu Dhabi. What can you tell us? What have you heard? Do you have an inkling? Do you have any knowledge?
Okay. Jeez Louise, can you let me answer, for God's sakes? So it's like an interrogation here.
Just answer the question, so Ariel. Jesus.
So I will admit this. I will admit that early on, my impression of quote-unquote Fight Island was that Dana White was scrambling. Dana White wanted to figure out how to get the UFC back. I mean, let's not forget, he didn't want to miss a single week. He wanted to do the London card some way, somehow, if you recall, on March 21st. And so I think he was throwing things out. He was working on things. He was coming up with plans. They were brainstorming. But I don't know if that was an actual real thing that quickly. I mean, it's impossible to do something like that that quickly. However, so my thing was always, all right, until I start to hear from the managers and the fighters that they're being approached about fighting on an island, I just don't believe it yet. And it's not because I want to say that he's a liar or anything. On the contrary, I'm just saying, like, until people are actually being offered fights at this location, to me, it's just a thing. It's a thing that they're selling t-shirts about and talking about, but it's not a real thing. And people love talking about it. And I think what happened was people really liked it. It caught like wildfire. It became a catchy thing to say. It became a great idea that people were like envisioning who's going to fight, where is it going to be, what's it going to look like. And then they started to really seriously, you know, work on it. First, they had to try to get the Jacksonville thing done, right? And then they start to think about this, and they got that done successfully for the most part. Now they're thinking about this. And last week around Wednesday, I got 5 calls from 5 different important people in the sport saying, Fight Island is real. We've been offered a fight. They're talking about this. They're debating that. They're negotiating this. And now I'm a believer that it's going to happen in July based on those conversations. Now, do I know the exact location? Honestly, hand on my heart, I do not know the exact location. But I do know that multiple fighters, managers, representatives have been approached about fighting on the island. I know that multiple fights are being discussed for the island. Dates are being discussed in July. I think it's a pretty safe bet that June is going to still be at the apex, and that's perfect. But to your point, they need Fight Island badly, or whatever this island is going to be and wherever it's going to be badly, because of the fact that the international fighters can't come to the United States. You're starting to see the cards a little thin now. You're seeing guys like Kevin Holland get, you know, a fight on 14 days notice after he last fought. All that stuff is because the cupboard is a little bare right now. And so the sooner they can get this up and running, the better they'll be off. And you're also going to see an influx of international fighters. So it'll be great for the Adesanyas, it'll be great for the Paulo Costas, it'll be great for the Connors, it'll be great for all those international fighters that right now can't fight in the United States. So I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later because of that.
Speaking of our buddy Connor, Ali Abdelaziz has said that Usman is angling for a fight with McGregor due to Masvidal chasing up that rematch with Nate Diaz. Is this all lip service at the moment, or do you know anything about this, Ariel?
So there's a really fascinating thing going on with the elite of 155 and 170 because, all right, it's so crazy how many people are involved here. So you had Masvidal and Usman, right? For whatever reason, I'm told that the negotiations there aren't going swimmingly, to put it in that sort of term. Then all of a sudden on Saturday, you have Masvidal saying, let's run it back with Nate. Hasn't talked about Nate for months. And now all of a sudden he says, we're running it back. Why? Because the negotiations aren't going well. Maybe he gets paid more if there's a rematch clause. Who knows? All of a sudden he's not talking. He just says, let's run it back with Nate. All right. Then we have Ali Abdelaziz, who's Kamaru Usman's manager, telling Brett Okamoto that, you know what? All right, if Masvidal's not available, we're going to fight Connor. Wait a second. You're the guys who keep saying that Connor needs to fight a gazillion times to sniff Khabib, that he doesn't deserve it, that we keep talking about it. And now Usman at 170 is going to give him a title shot? What's going on there? What's happening on your end? Okay, and if Nate and Masvidal, which Nate seems all in because he responded to Masvidal, Nate and Masvidal are tied up, then where does that even leave Connor? That's a massive question. You have the biggest draw in the history of the sport who right now doesn't have an obvious dance partner. How weird is that? What happens? Now, I wouldn't be surprised if this happened. What happens if Khabib asks for a little more time? His father's not feeling well. Send my best to his family. Do they try to do Gaethje versus Connor right away? I wouldn't be surprised. And then the winner fights Khabib. Big money fight for Gaethje. There's a backstory there. I wouldn't be surprised as well. So all of this is like so intertwined where we thought sure thing Masvidal Usman doesn't seem like a sure thing anymore. And then I wonder, hey, wait a second. Is the UFC trying to put together Gaethje and Connor? And is Ali trying to stop that from happening because he wants it to be Gaethje versus Khabib, and he's trying to pair Usman up with Connor? Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do.
There's a lot of weird things going on here.
Wow.
And I'm curious to see how it plays out. All very fresh, all very new. But yeah, this is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, that is really interesting now that you put it like that. There is a lot going on, as you said. I don't know. Like, I mean, I know there's different rules for McGregor, right? There always has been. He brings in a crowd like no other. But is there any way, like, I mean, this is how I read this Jones and Ngannou situation when they completely ruled out kind of paying these guys more, as it seems to be based on their social media. Like, is there a chance that, like, maybe you just won't see Conor fighting until we can get crowds back in there? Because of the amount of money he brings in from gates and stuff like that, or do you believe that they'd be willing to, you know, make sure they're paying Conor enough to fight if he could potentially fight on this Fight Island or wherever it might be?
So two things. I think one thing that's really interesting to monitor, because of course we saw it last week with John Jones and Francis Ngannou too, where the UFC, we all know they're tough negotiators, and we all know that, you know, they don't like to break the bank if they don't have to. But now they're starting to tell people, like, look, we're not making any money off the gate. So if you think you're going to come in here and ask for the world, you got another thing coming, because we're, quote unquote, losing money. Now, the fighters don't necessarily care about that because they don't make any money off the gate. So to them, they're like, yeah, and like, how does that affect me? But the UFC is saying, like, look, we need to be a little more stringent here. So that's going to be really interesting. And that's part of the reason why the Francis versus John stuff kind of fell off, like, before it even got started. Now, I'm curious. I don't believe it's dead necessarily, but it was interesting to see it all play out that way. And so you have that situation, and then you have the Conor situation, when initially I thought the same, like, okay, you know, they can't have him fighting on an island because they're going to lose out on the gate. They make 15 to 18 or so million dollars when he fights. Now they're just not going to get that money. That seems crazy. But I think two things happened to change the point of view on that. Number one, I think Conor was hesitant about that as well. And I think he was also honestly hesitant about the testing and the procedures and the way they were going to do things. Obviously, if you look at his social media, this cause is something that is very important to him. And I think that, and his manager, Adi, told me this as well. Adi Attar told me that once he saw how they did it in Jacksonville, he felt a lot better about it. So those reservations, I think, went away. And then he was also a little bit down on the idea of fighting in an empty arena for multiple reasons. And I think that once he saw the fights, those reservations went away as well. And then when you see how well the pay-per-view did, according to the Sports Business Journal, did 700,000 on the ESPN Plus pay-per-view. That's an incredible number in this day and age, considering they've changed the pay-per-view model. And I think that, could you imagine if Gaethje versus Ferguson does 700,000, which, by the way, you put that fight in November of last year in normal times, it's not doing 700,000. Great fight for all of us. We loved it. Hardcores, it's not doing 700,000 because the model wouldn't suggest that. Conor, I think, could do 2 million in this new era. Wow. And that's just an astounding number, right?
That's crazy.
So you'll make money, more money off the fact that there's no people in attendance. There's no sports going on at the moment. If you can fight in July, there's probably not going to still be any major American sports going on at the moment. ESPN's going to push it. So maybe you figure, okay, I'm going to lose here, but I'm going to gain there. So I think he's back on to being a player. It's just a matter of them getting this Fight Island up and running.
Right. And I mean, you're mentioning it there, you know, that, you know, it's the only gig in town, really, the UFC at the moment. I imagine that it's featuring a lot more mainstream broadcasts than ever, like news items, things like this. I know it's been featured on SportsCenter quite heavily, of course, and on ESPN. Is this like a huge moment for the UFC in terms of dragging casual eyes to the sport? Like, I couldn't believe that Donald Trump was at the start of the broadcast for 249. I thought that was crazy. I'd never seen anything like it before. But it really spoke to the mainstream kind of element that was there with UFC 249. I know some of it's controversial. You released an article today about, you know, new safety measures being added to the criteria for the UFC. But do you feel as though this is, you know, a good thing for the UFC, like an even a nod to it becoming even more mainstream during this situation when it's the only sport? Or is it, you know, we see a lot of criticism as well. Like, what way does the average American see the UFC at the moment?
I think so. Initially, when they were trying to put on the events in April at Tachi Palace, I think people were like, this is a little bit too, you know, too roguelike. Like, it's just a little crazy. It was very fresh. They were not doing it under the jurisdiction of the California State Athletic Commission. It just seemed too crazy. I think I've said this in other interviews, but there's a famous American sports moment where a coach He's no longer with us. His name, Dennis Green. He was the coach of the Arizona Cardinals. And on Monday Night Football, I know that none of this means anything to you, PT, but
oh, man, I love Monday Night Football. I love it. I breathe it.
All right. Well, Tuesday morning football for you guys, yes, over there. Absolutely. He was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, and they played the Chicago Bears, and the Bears were doing great that year, and the Cardinals weren't. And they almost beat the Bears, but then eventually they lost the game in the final moments. And he shows up to the post-fight or the post-game press conference. Excuse me. I always make that mistake when I try to talk about normal sports or the regular sports.
Always call it post-fight as well. Everything. Always, yeah. Post-fight. It's ridiculous.
Drives me nuts. So here I am trying to, you know, like spread my wings a little bit, and I'm saying post-fight. So he shows up, and he goes, "They are who we thought they were. They are who we thought they were." Like insinuating like, yeah, you guys all thought that the Bears were great, but you know, we knew that they were beatable. And so I thought of that quote when the UFC was trying to hurry back in April, where, you know, it wasn't being talked about. It wasn't that controversial because I felt like to the general public, the UFC was who we thought they were. It's combat sports. Combat sports is always a bit of a circus. They do things a little different. And a lot of people now are asking me like, oh, with the UFC back, you know, are there lessons that can be applied to what the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NHL are trying to do? And the answer is no. There's no lessons because those leagues have unions. Those leagues have board of governors. They have owners. Dana White, all he needs is 24 people to show up and he can put it on an event. And that's just the structure of the sport. That's not me hating on the sport. The sports are just structured completely different. Witness the fact that that article that you talked about that I posted on Monday, where, you know, they're outlining the new testing procedures. Okay, they sent out that memo to the fighters. That's a page and a half memo. The NHL, the National Hockey League, on Monday posted a 29-page memo on how they would, if they do come back, do the testing, do the boarding, all that stuff. It's just totally different sports. You need to get the Players Association involved. You need to get the owners on board, all that stuff. So to answer your question, I know I'm going on a crazy rant here. A lot of people, yes, have now watched and enjoyed it. And I think the fact that they did 700,000 is great. But I also think that when the NHL and the NBA and Major League Baseball come back, we'll kind of go back to where we were. And that's fine too. Like, the UFC was in a great spot here in America. They were on ESPN getting a lot of love and stuff like that. Now they're capitalizing off the fact that more people are at home, bored, wanting live sports, and that's great. But I don't think like we're going to see the UFC above the NBA or, you know, the NFL when they return. I think that that's kind of wishful thinking.
Are we any closer to getting a fighters union? I don't seem to think we are, but I mean, you will know better than me. Like, I feel like this incident, no, or anything, it should have shed more light on it for the fighters that they need to do this, but I don't really get that feeling from them.
No, nothing. I've seen nothing of that sort. If you can make the case, if there ever was a time, it would be now, right? But I haven't heard any talk of that. The last time there was any sort of serious talk was 2016, around the time of Connor Nate 2. You recall there were a couple of organizations trying to make some noise, but I've heard nothing remotely close to that happening.
So yeah, I'm looking for a bit of encouragement off you now. Now, people won't know, but I always call Ariel for encouragement and he always dishes it out, but it's time you guys heard what a motivational character he can be. Ariel, you've been down in your luck a few times in this industry, and as now me and Niall walk into the unknown, is there anything you could share with us to give us a bit of an oomph as we head into the free agency market, we'll say?
Yes, and yes, I have been down many times, probably too many times at this point, but there's a few things that are important to remember. Number one, thing that I've always felt, and look, I get down, I have tough moments where you feel sad, moments where you feel like, you know, everyone's against you. But it's very important to not feel sorry for yourself. It's very important to not lick your wounds. It's very important to not say the world dealt me a bad hand and now I'm screwed and I'll never get back and I'll never get back on my feet. That's the wrong approach. It's the wrong mindset. To me, the mindset should always be, all right, this happened. What am I going to do to get back on track? What do I have to do? All right, it was a great run, great memories, great times, great friends, great colleagues. Unfortunately, it's come to an end. How am I going to do things better now? How am I going to evolve? What am I going to do now that, you know, I've pressed the reset button differently? How am I going to change? What can I do better? What can I do to improve? All that stuff and more. And so if you think that the road to success is just, you know, clear skies, paved road, perfect, smooth sailing, you are sorely mistaken, and I know you don't believe that. The road to success is – well, and look where he is. You know, he's not even a part of this conversation, for God's sakes. Your back is probably so tired carrying that guy after all these episodes.
I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, well, I've said it. And so the road to success is always under construction. And once we acknowledge that, and we acknowledge that times change, people, you know, go different paths, but you know what? You got to keep going. You work hard. What's that famous line? You know, tough times don't last, but tough people do. That's you guys, right? That's you guys. And so I hope that you're not feeling sorry for yourself. I hope you're not feeling down. I hope you're grateful for the time. I remember when you joined MMA Fighting, I was so excited. I was so happy that I was going to get to work with you, and you've done phenomenal work. And this podcast in particular, I don't listen to any other MMA podcast. I only listen to one. I only listen to Eurobash, and that is The God's Honest Truth. I'll show you my podcast player. It's the only one that I listen to because you guys have great chemistry and you have something going. And I told you this privately, and I'll say it publicly. I say less guests, more banter. I want the banter. I want the news at the top. I want the back and forth. I want all that stuff. And then maybe one or two guests here or there. It's great. But what you guys have been able to do is become the voice of European MMA. You've been able to break the stories. People trust you. They come to you. They want to talk to you. They want to get in your good graces. They listen to you because they react to the things that you're saying. And it's hard to do that in this day and age. And so I commend you guys for having a great run. But the run isn't over. And if you think the run is over, you got another thing coming. If you think that you're just going to leave us all now, then you're wrong. You're not going to leave us all now. And dare I say, you should just be the Bash. You don't have to be Euro Bash. Why should you just confine yourself to Euro? Why? I want to know what you think about Henry Cejudo. He's not European. Can you talk about him too? I want to know what you think about, I don't know. Well, I was going to say Bones versus Ngannou, but Ngannou's technically European now.
We take him, yeah. You know, he's one of ours, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But you get the point, right?
Yeah, I get it.
It's been a great run, and I hope, you know, it's unfortunate, I know, because of COVID-19 things happen, but it's important to leave on a good note, to be thankful. It was a great run. I worked for Vox for 9 years, try to leave on the best note possible and not burn bridges. Everyone shake hands. It's been a great run, and we don't know what the future holds. Maybe we'll be back, maybe we won't, but you try not to leave with any grudges or any, you know, ill intent in your heart, because I think that that weighs you down.
I absolutely agree with you, and it was a great time. We had some brilliant, brilliant times here. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I want to thank you very much, Ariel, because I owe a lot to you for even getting me into this publication and for encouraging me to do this podcast, which has been a big hit with the old Europeans. I think they're going to be a bit annoyed with you trying to get us off the European angle, though, to be honest. But you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, that was a compliment. I'm just saying that you guys – listen, I like the fact – this is the beauty of podcasts.
You said what you said, Ariel.
Listen, you can get as niche as possible in the podcast world, right? And that's the beauty of it. That's why podcasts are doing so well now. But all I'm saying is I hope you guys don't think that you can't flex your muscles, you can't spread your wings, that sort of thing, because you're very good at what you do. And I think that not only are you guys great podcasters, hosts, presenters, as they say in Europe, and writers as well. You're just great personalities. And that's, at the end of the day, what people want. They want personalities. I enjoy the podcast very much. I enjoy what you guys do. And I've also been pushing you, as you know, to do video. I don't know why you're so reluctant on that front. But we can discuss that at a...
That's McGrath's fault again. Sorry, man. I mean, it is his fault. It's completely his fault. But Ariel, I love you very much, my friend. I can't tell you what this means to us to have you on the show. I'll continue to be a huge fan and, of course, a great friend of yours. And I hope you continue in this beautiful vein of success you're having, my friend, because you're killing it at the moment. With the boxing as well. Helwani Boxing. When's the first event?
Oh, I mean, don't get me started. Helwani Boxing. I mean, look, Fight Island might be real, but Helwani Boxing, way more real than Zuffa Boxing. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Am I right, PT?
Absolutely, man.
Am I right?
I've got my thing in the post, actually, my boxing thing. It only arrived. They ordered about 2 months ago, but I'm going to have a lot of time to hone my skills in the next few weeks. So watch out for that video when it comes.
Wait, are you saying you still haven't gotten your gear? Is that what you're saying? Your shirt?
I've got my shirt and I've got my gear, but I haven't cut the thing yet. I only got that the other day. I haven't cut the thing that has to go on the headband, but you better get ready for some videos, my friend.
Wait a second. You got the shirt and you haven't shown me a picture?
I got that today. I got it today, the shirt.
Wow.
I got the thing on Saturday.
So there you go. The stars are aligning for us here, huh?
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing? You get it today. I'm finally, like, you throw in the towel on the last episode. You see, who can I get who's available? Has nothing else to do now that his show is like an hour and a half. Let's get old Helwani back and let's have him save the day. But that's okay. I'm happy to save the day. It's been great. And yesterday, by the way, I said, I used the term good crack, and I said that you gave me permission. You didn't even come to my defense.
Absolutely. You're an honorary Irishman, Ariel Helwani. I've said this for many years.
You didn't come to my defense.
Do you want me to come to your defense? You need me to say this is okay, this is Irish approved?
Yes.
I will do that.
Yes.
I'm about to do that right now.
I need a fellow Irishman to do that. You've had such a great run, my friend. I'm very proud of you. I remember when you were just a little peon guy staying at the Hooters Hotel in Las Vegas. No direction. No motivation. Just eating chicken wings all day. What's God knows what you were doing over there. I mean, it was a little bit gross. And now you've turned into an actual beast. You've turned into a beast. You've turned into a powerhouse. And better days are coming. It's been a great run. Much love to everyone. I think this is my first time back on MMA Fighting since I left. This is kind of a historic moment right here. But anyways, it's not about me. It's about you. All right? So much love. You guys are going to kill it. And I'm honored to be on. I don't even know if we're wrapping the thing. I just kind of felt like it was a good
It's a natural time to wrap it. We love you, Ariel. You're the man. I can't wait to speak to you again. And I'll be tuning in as always, my friend. I love you to bits.
I love you to bits as well. To many, many bits.
Talk to you soon, man. All the best.
Cheers.
The great Ariel Helwani popping by the bash for its last ever episode. Absolutely fabulous. What a man. Great to speak to him and pick his brain on all of these topics, this madness that we currently have in the sport. So I'm really, really grateful for his time. And I spoke to him about that there, Niall, the Conor McGregor v. Usman shout from Ali Abdelaziz. Is this just lip service from Ali Abdelaziz, or do you believe that this is a fight that could potentially happen?
I've said it for quite a while. I think this could be the route McGregor's going to go. And the reason why I've sort of said that over the last number of months is Conor's all about records. So I think we even heard that in the Donald Cerrone fight. You know, he was the first one, I think, to finish Donald, whatever, with a head kick or most head, whatever the stat was. What was the stat again, the Conor? He got some stat.
I know, it was a pretty weird one.
Yeah, it was a weird stat, but things like that. That's what interests Conor. He's interested stats, records, all this sort of malarkey. And I think if you look at what he wants to do, and that is claim a third title in a third weight division. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And I think you have to take into consideration as well. Have you seen McGregor lately? Jesus, man. He looks like he's put a lot of muscle on. And that could be very much the thinking, in my opinion, that he is going to go to 170 and stay there. Obviously, his last fight was at that weight class as well. So maybe it is a warm-up for a summer date. And I think, you know, by doing that, he puts himself in the conversation to be the GOAT, as he's been talking about his rankings over the weekend on social media as well. So it doesn't surprise me at all. I don't know if Ali is playing a game. We know what Ali's like. He likes to tease fighters. He likes to tease ideas and then not follow up on them a lot of the time. So yeah, Ali has a lot of power in the UFC, and a lot of his fighters are champions at the moment. So it could go either way. But yeah, I would not be surprised the way Conor McGregor looks at the moment, the way he thinks, the way I think he thinks in terms of winning championships and accolades, it would be a tall process that I'm sure Conor's looking at that 170 pound strap. And in fairness, he's always sort of said that he wants three world titles in different divisions.
Said that to yours truly back in the old Severe MMA days, I believe. He put out his list of GOATs there the other day. I'm gonna give you a quick breakdown. Number one was Anderson Silva, due to him. Number one is Anderson Silva. Number two is Conor himself, if not tied one, he says. GSP in at three. Jones is four, maybe tied third. And does he give us a number five? Is it DC or DJ? He doesn't. Does he mention it? He doesn't. He doesn't even give us a number five. But what do you think of that? You know, in terms of who is your MMA GOAT?
Oh, God.
It's easy. Like, it's GSP every time. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, it is GSP. I think you have to go with GSP because of the lack of taintingness. like, that's the bottom line. I think you have to go down that thought at the moment. Yeah, I can't argue with that. You know, he came back, he beat Bisping, won the 185-pound title, left the sport again. He's done things the right way. And I just don't see how you can give it to Anderson Silva, in my opinion, after what happened towards the sort of last number of years in his career. And then you've John Jones as well, with the numerous issues he's had. Geez, I don't even know where you start with the issues that guy's had.
Yeah, I don't even know how many times that's happened to him, to be honest.
Exactly. So, alone on that, out of those guys you have there, there's only GSP. The guy's a total legend in the sport. And in terms of pound for pound now at the moment, I'd have to give it to Mr. Miocic, because of what he's done in the heavyweight division, most amount of defences, you know, really good streaks.
Henry Cejudo, I'd say number one.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout either. Yeah, you know, you can't discard Henry, even though he relinquished his belt earlier today, officially.
I don't think he relinquished
it. It was officially vacated today by the UFC. So, listen, Stipe at the moment, but yeah, I can't argue with GSP. Definitely not.
I saw someone speaking about this on Twitter earlier, and forgive me because I forget who it was, but you know, they were kind of saying it's a bad look to vacate Cejudo's title simply because he wants more money, essentially. Like, he said, like, yeah, I have a number here. I'm retired, yeah, but I have a number here if you want me to come back. And yoink, there goes the title. I mean, is that a bad move from the UFC to drop a guy for essentially wanting more money?
Well, no, listen, I think maybe those words were taken out of context a little bit. I know he said that, but he also said, you know, he's other things to focus on in his life. You know, he wants to get away from the sport, do other things. He's a lot of the projects. See, you know, you can look at that as well, and you know that wasn't brought up in the tweet you've mentioned. So no, I
but it was also last week Ali Abdelaziz saying he'd be back in July. So I mean, that's a bit.
That is true, but we know again what you know with Ali. You just never know what that guy's got in his mind. But yeah, interesting all the same. And I do think I agree what you said a couple of weeks ago, Petey, and refresh the people. You know, I think we'll get to a point in this division where we have, you know, maybe Peter Yan as champion in a year and a half's time, and Henry Cejudo comes back in International Fight Week for the right price, and they'll get him back because the guy's retired bloody, you know, unbeaten at the top of his game. And, you know, I would love to see him just go out and see you later. And I know, you know, we often say that guys don't go out, you know, on top. This is a perfect example where he could do that, like GSP, for example, another reason why he's the GOAT. And if Henry was to do that and stay gone, it would be a wonderful story. But I agree with you. I think he's just going to sit this out, do a few little things that he has lined up for the next year, and then potentially come back, get a big payday against someone like the, you know, the aforementioned Peter Yan, if he is the champion. But, you know, it is interesting. I think it opens a lot of doors for the division now. Great division. And I'd love to see them do that four-man tournament that he actually mentioned even himself post-fight after that win against Dominic Cruz. I think it's a fantastic idea.
My money's only on one man if they do that four-man tournament.
Yeah, I agree.
Piotr Yan, right? I feel like it's his time right now.
Yeah, listen, I don't think you can look past Piotr at the moment from what we've seen. He absolutely, you know, went through Uriah Faber with a fine-tooth comb and literally picked the moment where he wanted to finish the fight. We heard what he said to him. It was scary. And when you're going out doing that to the likes of a legend like Uriah Faber, you know, the sky is the limit for Peter Yan, in my opinion. And again, I think the UFC are, you know, maybe realize that as well, but I think they want him to learn the language. That's been a big sort of issue over the last number of years of the UFC. They want the champion speaking English. They want to be able to market them as much as they possibly can to the US market and audience.
Yeah, I mean, I think Moroi is an incredibly tough fight for him, but I do like his chances there. But Sandhagen, his movement is so unique.
He is good.
I think that's a very tough fight. And I think Aljo probably is the hardest matchup there because of how good his wrestling has been and how much he's evolved since that loss to Moraes, that knee from hell back in the day. I mean, I think that's the matchup. If I was going to pick two people to fight for the belt right now, it's been vacated, I'd go Sterling, Yan. I think most people would. But do you think Sterling probably is the toughest test for the Siberian gangster at the moment?
Yeah, but I wouldn't. Yeah, I agree with you with his wrestling and his all-round game. He's come on so much. And, you know, he did. He went through a bit of a sticky patch and he's learned a lot since then. He's really bounced back in impressive form. But again, Moraes is a guy in there who's absolute power in those hands. And he can cause anyone problems on a night. And you never know. But yeah, I do. I like that fight. And I think, you know, Peter Yan's going to give anyone problems. And I do agree with you. I think Aljamain is probably the other front runner in there with his all-round game. That he could make a push. And listen, let's not forget about Dominic Cruz either. You know, a guy who's still a legend in the sport. He obviously suffered that loss to Henry, But I'm sure he'll be wanting to get back in there soon. You know, obviously those injuries have hampered him over the last number of years. But if he can stay fit and get back in there as well, he'll be knocking on the door in a year if he's continue on fighting as well with those guys. Imagine like Peter Yan and Dom Cruz, man. Like what a fight that'd be.
Savage.
Yeah, you know.
Savage. And he needs those names, I feel like, to really get him over. If it is this language thing, I think they would be keen if he was the champion to put him in against the likes of Aldo, even though there'd be not much English quotes getting pushed out.
Yeah, I think I think you destroy him. And yeah, it is. It's about those names. It's about building the profile. It's about, for the UFC, as we well know, it's about money. It's about pay-per-view sales. And they're the guys that do it for you. And I do think that is, you know, I can't see the UFC doing a four-man tournament. I'd love to see it, but I can't see it happening. And I wouldn't be surprised if they got in that sort of route of popping them up against these big contenders to give them that final sort of push over the line. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. I'd love to see a tournament, but you know the UFC, they always piss us off.
Speaking about pushing us over the line, we couldn't do this last show without getting the great Neil Siri on to give us a piece of his mind. What a legend. We had hoped that he would be a co-host of this show. And he did start off that way. Unfortunately, the budget wasn't released. It kept on getting pushed back, so we couldn't make it happen in the end. But very glad that he get on the phone and speak to us and sign us off and give us a bit of shit, because we always love a bit of that from Neil. Of course, very upset that Liverpool still aren't champions. I made sure Woo-hoo! I asked him about that just to ruin his day. But yeah, here's Neil. We talked to him for about 15 minutes. The line isn't great, but it's still the GOAT, Neil Siri, back in 15 minutes. And by popular demand, he is back. One-time co-host of this podcast, the legendary Neil Siri. Neil, long time. People have been asking for you back. How are you getting on? I'm sure it has been music to your ears to hear that me and Niall got the bullet.
He's got the bullet because he's a fucking shrink at his job. He's doing fuck all bar bollocks for the...
Inundated for many months. Every time we posted an episode, where is Siri? It was so destroyed from staying up all day, and then as soon as we posted, we're like, where the fuck is Siri? But you were magic. I told you that myself. We were trying to get
we put the blueprint out there, and you're still fucking leading step over to sort of the fucking up.
Too much room for activities.
Too much room for activities, yeah. He's going, fuck hell, there's the serious jobless. Even Shank is out the door.
It's a harsh reality, but it's the truth what you're saying. how was retirement? Like, I mean, the 40 you've got from retirement, how is it going? Do you miss the game at all, the fighting aspect, Neil? Or has this whole situation kind of brought you away from the game a bit? I was all often wondering, well, all this behind closed doors fights were going on and stuff like that, how you felt about it. What did you think?
Behind the closed doors fights and stuff?
Yeah, like, I mean, the Ferguson thing. Gaethje and all that stuff. Like, I mean, are you still watching? Are you still an avid fan?
Oh, yeah. Still as good as early morning and watch the fights going on, whether it's behind closed doors or whatever, you know. It's still interesting, you know. Still interested. As retirement came, like, I've no interest whatsoever in fucking ever fighting again. Is that what you're asking? But interested in the sport in general, yeah, still a big fan of it, you know. So, general, the fights have been really good lately. I've been interested with the no crowd in it, can hear the punches actually taking heed of the damage we fighters took. You know, a lot of the time the crowd would have drowned it out there, the shots and stuff. And now that there's no crowd there, just got basically microphones and two people going at it, you know. A lot of people taking heed. And as you can see, a lot of people are saying these fighters should have been paid more from the start, you know. So maybe it's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead right about the sound. It's crazy hearing some of them shots land, especially the Gaethje-Ferguson fight. Jesus Christ, it was nasty stuff. You used to always tell me about the crowd and what you got from them. Do you think that would be a weird dynamic? Do you think you'd enjoy that, the kind of almost sparring session kind of backdrop these kind of fights have?
Yeah, you know what? Look, it's hard because, look, most of the times, whether they're Dublin or it was always down bad. So there wasn't many people there. You know? So when I saw fucking Louis Smoke in Vegas, you know what I mean? It was about 20,000 people there. If there was even 3,000 in the crowd, it would be surprised, you know. So that was like really nothing to me, other than the like the Dublin shows and obviously Glasgow me last week. That would have been, you can feed off stuff like that, but I just see, look at the shots that people just, you know, and we just think it's good that people are taking an interest in the damage that people are taking.
You know? Is the interest in the damage? I mean, Jesus Christ! I'd be sitting there going, like, I was rewinding some of the shots that landed. Like, are you saying that, like, you think it might bring people more aware of the toll that the fighters kind of take on their bodies, like, and that's why maybe they should get more money?
Yeah, like that's one of the aspects. And then you've got when some people have got down, some people think that they've gone down easy. Mm. You know, they've gone down. They were looking for a way out. This, that, and the other, you know. Now that they're hearing the shots that fighters are actually taking, you know, without the crowd surrounding, without crowd in the shots out, you know, they're actually standing up and going, oh, Jesus, hold on here a minute. Like, if you look at that Gaethje fight, that was just incredible, the amount of damage that Tony Ferguson took. I was very, very surprised that it's gone. I didn't pull him out. And then, on the other hand, I was listening to Eddie Bravo on the podcast with Joe Rogan.
I saw that, yeah.
What he was talking about, actually just being sent in blindfolded and going, hold on a minute, what am I going to say here to the fighter? It was mind-blowing to think that at such a high level like that, that stuff was still happening, you know?
Mm.
I'm sure, as Eddie came out himself and he says, look, he's a jiu-jitsu coach. He's been there from the start. He's just there for a bit of voice. But to be thrown in at the deep end there and when a fighter is taking so much damage like that, I don't know how Tony Ferguson must stand on that. It's incredible.
It really is. Now, you're dead right. Did you see the Anthony Smith fight? That was a different kind of situation. Like, I mean, I felt like watching it, I was like, these two lads are done. Like, I mean, I think most people, like, I mean, sorry, Smith's clearly done here. The fight isn't going to change. I don't think there's going to be a big surge from this guy in the last round. And it seemed like he was nearly appealing to the referee by handing him his teeth and then going back to his corner and saying, lads, me teeth are after falling out that he didn't want to be in there. Obviously, I'm not Anthony Smith, but were you kind of watching it like that? Like, why isn't someone
you're looking at it, like, there's a good thing about the no crowd because obviously people can hear the shots that fighters are taking. And then the bad thing is, look, they're hearing what's going on in the fight, what's going on in people's corners. I know a lot of people are like, but even the crowd sometimes block out what fighters are being told in the corners. But obviously because there's no crowd there and so you're listening to some of the corner men, it's in that fight, it's just it's a hard listen, you know. When somebody's handing their teeth to the ref, he's putting it in his pocket.
It was mental, wasn't it? I've never seen anything like him in life.
I know it's a big stake, I get that, but you know, point of safety and out here, you know.
Yeah.
And I think somebody should have maybe Connell there on both fights, you know, even on Tony Ferguson and on Smith, you know. But look, that's the end of the game, you know.
Would that change? Like, I mean, you're in a lot of corners over the years. Like, when you see something like that, do you ever kind of think, Jesus, like, if I ever see a situation like that, I won't hesitate with the towel, etc., and things like that? Does a fight like that ever change how you do your job in a corner or anything like that?
On occasions, I've pulled fighters out, you know, that I thought, look, here, you have nothing left here, coming back into the corner. And like, I think I've done it on a couple of the battle zones and stuff like that, and fighters were coming back in and broke up and we just didn't send them out for the tour rounds. You know, we're just here, look, you're done, ref, it's over, you know. But like, we haven't had many of them throughout the years where you'd say, hold on here a minute, you know, what we do, we let them back out, this, that, and the other, you know. So look, I've been lucky enough to pull a couple of people out and say, yeah, look, even up the gym, you know, even up the gym, me and Andy can say, yeah, hold on, taking a bit of a smack there, and fighters don't want to come out. Just pull them out and say, "Hey, look, we'll be back in a day or two, you know, and just let that come down and blah, 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 you know." But just about fights like that and letting them go on, and when, especially when the decision isn't going to change, you know, I think Tony Ferguson and Andy Smith there could have fought for 10 rounds and this decision still wouldn't have been, wouldn't have changed. So, you know, it was one way traffic, you know. But look, I suppose big fights, big money, you know.
Yeah, like it just feels like, you know, the fighters by nature just so tough. Like they're never going to sit down in a corner and say, "Here, lads, I'm done. There's no way I'm going back in there." Like, is that way, like, in the way you're kind of telling me you've done it, where you've just looked at the ref and say, "No, it's over." Like, you're taking that decision nearly away from him and saying, "Look, I'm going to be the responsible one here. I'm saving you from yourself." Do you think that's the way more coaches need to be?
Oh, yeah. If the fight is already done, you know, I'll save them for a different day. Look, if you look at Andy Smith now, they're going to keep the place.
Yeah, Jesus. And the rest.
You know what I mean? It's Peter, and you know what a damage he's taken. Even the Tony Ferguson, when he was up dancing in the hospital and stuff like that. He's got months ahead of him. We have there before he can get back in. He's probably back trying. I don't know. You know, he's probably like fucking punching coconuts or whatever the fuck he's doing. Heads over on a load of coconuts. But, you know, it takes its toll, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. How about the coaching for you, Neil? Are you kind of, like, I know you were helping Red a bit there before the last fight, and I know you're doing a lot in the gym. I know, obviously, the gym's closed now at the moment, but, I mean, is that something you're looking forward to now when the Rhino starts opening again? You're going to be down there coaching the lads again?
Yeah. To be honest, the only thing I'm really missing at the minute, as everybody knows, I'm not too sociable in any way, so we don't really give a fuck about this lockdown shit. It doesn't bother me. Don't go to the pub unless someone left the point to drink. So
that's fair.
It just, don't really give a fuck about it. Now, this obviously of the gym, the banter, and the training of the lads. As I say, we had a couple of people that was actually firing all cylinders there, and it's after taking away a little bit of momentum. You know, we've got the two Moldovans who are doing really well. Constantine is going to arrive, and James Cheaton was back. Killing people, you know, and the momentum is probably gone now with the lockdown and shows. They're probably not going to see a show next year, you know, Ireland or in England till probably late next year, early next year. Who knows at the minute, you know? They're struggling to get in a bug in the gig at the minute, you know. So, looking for shows back on the phone, but then obviously the UFC. It's hard, you know?
Yeah, like, and that was it for me. Like, I mean, I felt for the first time Irish MMA was going in a great direction since that glory years, basically, with you guys in the UFC. Like, I felt like Reese McKee was knocking on the door. If he had that Belfast fight, he might have got the call up. And then, as you said, James Sheehan there, lots of young guns signed to Cage Warriors. And we know Cage Warriors is the path there to the UFC. It just felt very exciting. And of course, there was a lot going on with Bellator there as well. So many Irish fighters signed to that. And now it's all gone. You know, it feels like we were just on the verge of something big happening again. Did you get that impression? I know it's very unlikely that we'll ever have a golden era like you were involved in on Conor's ascent and all these ascending at the same time. But it did feel like we're on the verge of something big happening there. Did you get that sense?
Yeah, well, look, if you look at the fights that have been signed, the quality of the fights that have been matched, you know, and the performances that the fighters were bringing, you know, we were getting out. Yeah, look, you said the UFC was coming back to Dublin for a reason, because we were making waves again, you know. That was the reason they were coming. They weren't coming back because this whole lot of the Irish guys are great. They're coming back because we were making waves again in the European market, you know, that got good fighters there. And look, it's probably a lost opportunity of a couple of fighters that maybe could have been signed for the UFC, I don't know. You know, but to get things up and running again, you just don't see the end of it. You don't see where it's going to kick off again, you know. We've got a long way ahead of all this.
I got to ask you before we end this, Neil, about Liverpool. Obviously, you know, you thought you were going to have your hands on the league, and
it's going already.
What's going on there?
Well,
What is happening there? Have they decided what's going on? Like, I mean, it feels torturous for Liverpool fans after waiting so long. You've played this magic season all year, absolutely unbelievable football. You know, you've all but your name on the trophy, and then this happens. Have they made up their minds?
Two matches from taking the fucking league, and everything falls apart. We actually believe that the coronavirus started in China to stop Chris Fields fighting again. You know. It was Chris Fields making the show. You know, not that he could fight any, like, when he was back in the day, he could fight anyway. You know what I mean? He was obviously. But look, coming out and having fun so many years, fucking Wuhan decided to release a virus to get some fucking going in the cage again, you know? But. Look,
you heard it here first. Coronavirus created to keep Chris Fields out of the cage. Oh my God, he's going to be very upset with this. And he's out there just saying nice things about us on his podcast with Paul Redmond as well. What do you think of that matchup there? Reds are in Chris with the Sun, I believe it is. Reds are in Chris have launched a podcast with Simon Maguire, I believe, with the Sun, and he was singing our praises last week, and now he's going to listen to this, and Neil Siri's giving him dogs.
Well, maybe they should have tied me off to say full call, you know what I mean? Came to the service and told me, yeah, look, pay him off, I won't open your mouth about him, but look.
They should have.
Just posting Chris balls, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. He's always get a few in there on each other. But, yeah, Siri, I'm so glad you came on to speak to us again, mate. And maybe...
Yeah, so that's you gone, isn't it?
Yeah, we're done. Throwing out, like, yesterday's newspapers. Yeah, we're done. It's all over.
It's all over. I don't know,
Any jobs going in your place, no?
I really wouldn't fucking employ you. Are you kidding me?
I work hard. I'm not like Niall McGrath. I'm the hard worker.
That's
the only
time you're walking
into the
yard,
would
you? Fuck off,
would you? I will indeed, Neil. You're a legend. We loved having you on. It was great to have you back again. The fans of the podcast would not have forgiven me if we didn't have you on. So thanks so much, my friend. And hopefully when this shit ends, I can go up to the Shilling or somewhere around Finglas and meet you for a pint. I'll pay.
Oh, no. What's your pay? Can I go?
That's pretty mad. I'll talk to you soon, Siri. You're a legend. All the best.
And there it is, the last guest of our MMA fighting tenure, Neil Siri. I wouldn't have it any other way. What a man. What a legend. A beautiful, beautiful thing. As expected, you got a bit of shit there, Noel.
Sure, listen, what's fucking new with that rat?
Harsh.
Listen, he supports Harsh. Liverpool. Siri, like, he is what he's got him. Like, he is what he is, you know what I mean?
Don't mind McGrath, I love you. You know I love you all the time. I know
it's we're the last segment ever here, but we probably should have a look at the card, right? That this weekend. Otherwise, what the hell are we even doing, my friend? Anything that's jumping out to you there, Noel McGrath?
No. I'm gonna mess now.
There's a fight?
Nah, listen, it's not the strongest card in the world. I think we can both agree on that. Couple of scraps there that are obviously pretty interesting. I think the main events, you know, Gilbert Burns has really sort of turned the table and got a bit of consistency together since moving to 170. Looks really, really impressive. Woodley hasn't been in there in a while. Really interesting main event for me. You know, you have obviously Antonina Shevchenko against Caitlin Chikagian, a really good women's match. You've Mackenzie Dern, Anna Seifers as well. Decent scrap. Kevin Holland back in there after 2 weeks. Really impressed with Kevin Holland, and yeah, he's probably fought about 15 times since being in Contender Series a couple of years back. Super impressive. And then we've a couple other bouts on the card there further down. You know, like Lewis Smolka and Casey Kenny, that's a decent one. You know, Tim Elliott against the very highly touted Brandon Royval. So that's an interesting one there as well. It's a decent card, and they're putting on cards. We can't complain too much from what cards they're putting on at the moment, because obviously there's not a lot of fighters available, especially the European contingent. So fair play to them again for going after, and fair play to all the fighters for stepping up. But yeah, listen, it's not the strongest card in the world, but there is some really interesting dynamics in there for us to get some, you know, finishes and exciting matches.
As you've said there, Team Europe is made up of Blagoy Ivanov against Augusto Sakai and Antonina Shevchenko against Caitlin Chookagian. I'm not fancying a big night of success for Europe, even though, like, I think Blagoy might pull it off. I think it might be a bit of a difficult one for Antonina Shevchenko. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Caitlin's boxing is really crisp and good, clean. You know, loves to go in there through a few combos, real Mark Henry style, and get out of there, use her feet. She's very, very quick. And, you know, obviously coming off that win against Lucy Pudilova, the Roxanne Modafferi fight didn't go Antonina's way. It was a performance I think we were expecting more at the time, and she just didn't deliver, and I think that's going to be a problem. And I feel sorry for her in a way, because she is constantly in her sister's shadow, and you know, it must be very, very tough for her to sort of get past that, and it hasn't happened so far. She has not impressed me, particularly in any of her performances in the octagon, and there's a lot of pressure on her. I do feel like Caitlin's been there, she's fought for the title. You know, people know what you're getting when you get Caitlin Chookagian in there. But Antonina needs to really sort of pull it out of the bag on this occasion. I don't like it for her. I just don't like this fight.
In a way, right, I'm kind of thinking about it and saying, like, you know, her loss was Modafferi grounded her quite easily, you know. And won the fight from there. But Chookagian isn't really known for grappling as much. She's known for her footwork and being evasive. Like, in a way, is she playing into Antonina Shevchenko's kind of wheelhouse by standing and striking with her? Something that I guess people have been reluctant to do in some ways.
Yeah, but we haven't seen it. That's the problem, you know.
Yeah, we haven't seen that in stunning yet.
Yeah,
to be fair.
So when we're not seeing it, I think, you know, she's been in there with obviously her sister, who pretty much ate her up with elbows in that fight, Caitlin. She would have learned a lot from that. And it's not even that long ago. When was that fight? UFC 247 back in February. So fair play to Caitlin for getting back in there so quick again. Wants to eradicate that title loss. And I do. I think Caitlin will have learned a lot from that. And she is real quick, man. She's real hard to get after. We've seen that numerous occasions. Opponents have really found it hard to keep up her pace and her volume, and I think that could be the undoing of Antonina Shevchenko in this fight. But I'm expecting something from Antonina, but whether we'll get it or not, I'm not too sure. I think her confidence might have taken a pounding in her UFC tenure so far.
Yeah, no, it's all good points, my friend. So I guess we'll finish off by discussing what's next. We don't have any concrete plans at the moment. Free agency is what beckons this time next week. I'll probably already be sauced in the garden, let's be honest. But you've been an amazing audience for us, a fantastic community, as I have said many, many times. We didn't expect to build something this big and have such a great following for the podcast. And it's been a real dream of mine to work with MMA Fight, and three great years with them. So I'd like to thank Brian Tucker for the opportunity. And it was just a pleasure working with such brilliant, brilliant people. People who were there at the start and the people who are there now, absolutely brilliant. I've enjoyed every second of it. And going away to the events around the world, absolutely amazing. But most of all, of course, it's been growing this bad boy, the Eurobash. Niall, I'm sure you're going to wax lyrical about your great times with the Bash here.
Yeah, it's been fun. We've obviously been partners on podcasting. I'm not crying, by the way. I'm just
he is. Yeah, no, he's getting very emotional. Jesus, no,
Listen, we've been partners for quite some time over the last number of years, and this one's been a fun one. It's been how long have we been doing this? I don't even know. 2 years, 2.5 years
since August 2018. So about a year and a half, or I don't know, whatever it is.
It's been a fun ride. And yeah, listen, you know, we'll move on. I'm sure we'll keep the guys with some announcements in the next couple of weeks. And I know we're going to sit down this week and have a long discussion about what's next. And I'm sure we can work out something.
We have lots of ideas. I'll tell you that much. We have lots of ideas. We're talking to lots of people as well, but it's just the situation that we're in at the moment, the whole global recession situation.
Yeah.
Makes it very difficult to get the ball rolling on these situations. But there's definitely a lot of interest out there. And, you know, I think it goes without saying, Noel, that we are going to be doing a podcast one way or the other. Is that safe to say?
Nah. Nah. We gotta chat this. You know, we gotta sit down and have a discussion. We'll let the guys know in due time whenever we're ready to release. But yeah. Yeah, maybe.
But don't be casuals about it now. We're gonna be changing maybe. Our feeds and stuff, so we don't want any casuals not change. Oh, where is it? Where is it? You're gonna fucking know. We're gonna tweet it. I don't even want to have to prompt you. We're gonna have to start. If we're going out by ourselves here, you're gonna have to expect a lot more likes and subscribe kind of shit on the show, because we're gonna have to generate that ourselves.
Yeah.
If that's the way it goes, we still don't know.
But like, you know, I think if you're putting something together, it's costly process. People don't tend to understand that, you know, all the gear, all the equipment, all the streaming, hosting applications. It's a big commitment. It's a good wacko wedge. So, yeah, you know, the only way people survive in this industry and this game is from subscriptions and, you know, liking things and subscribing and downloading. That's what the game's about. So yeah, you motherfuckers, you better fucking like, subscribe, share, click that fucking bell button, all that bollocks, or I'll come after you all.
And make sure you tell everyone how much you're gonna miss us. Don't forget that. We all need a great outpouring of emotion tomorrow with this. The last rants goes out, of course. It's been a pleasure. I have nothing else to say, Ree, Noel. That's all I've got.
Yeah, no,
I was going to crack a beer now, but Noel McGrath was the one who said, actually, listen, mate, I'm actually looking after myself now, if you wouldn't mind not being such a fucking degenerate for one podcast.
I tell you the one thing. I'm struggling a little bit with the fucking, with energy and stuff. My energy levels have just sapped from not eating meat. Maybe you start drinking.
I'm afraid you're going to have to get back into the old bovine category just for the good of your health, my friend.
I think so, yeah. But, I haven't been drinking much either. So, yeah, listen, folk. But listen, no, it's been fun. And I'd like to thank everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. All the guys at MMA Fighting. And, yeah, listen, we'll sit down, have the conversations, and we'll discuss this week. I think we're going to have a conference call tomorrow or something. You and I, we've a couple of people. Sorry, I better not say
that. Said too much.
All right, okay, I've cut it out. So we'll iron out some shit, and I'm sure we'll see.
Well, that's it. That look, you couldn't ask for more information than that, guys. So one last time, let's play us out, Big Dutchie, with our beautiful, beautiful music. Thank you all so much. You've been lovely, lovely people. Thanks. We love yous, and we'll see yous next time.